Today we're picking up in Proverbs chapter 11. We are at verse 16. It's very interesting as we pick up here. We are beginning to notice a pattern as Solomon is trying to teach his son Rehoboam of how to think about what he does in his life, about how to do the things that are righteous, that are godly, versus the things that are unrighteous, that are ungodly. And with that, we need to begin to separate and start seeing how things, how we live and how our life is organized by God. There are things that we cannot change. It is who we are. I've drawn it on the board. There are things we can change. Those are the things that we do. Those are the things that Solomon is talking about. It's the things that we can do, or the things that we do. It doesn't change who we are. For instance, the young man that is drawn on the board, that is my picture. It's who I am. My mother and father is Sterling and Lavina. I cannot change who I am and who my parents are. I cannot change that. I was 19 and a quarter inches long when I was born. I am now 6'1". I cannot change how I have grown. When I was born, I was 8.5 pounds. I am now 255. I cannot change what has happened to me, okay? I try, but it's difficult. My parents, my fathers, and all that tend to be the same build that I am. It's just who I took after. I cannot change those things about me. I was born bald. I quickly started growing blonde hair. I was blonde till about the age of 13, and my hair began to change to brown. And it got darker, and now, as I'm almost reaching 60, you will start seeing some gray come in. That's who I am. I cannot change that. Oh, I can temporarily change it. I can do things to temporarily change it, but I cannot change it in the long run. It's just who I am. I have blue eyes. Although in past I have worn contacts that have made me brown eyes or green eyes or bright blue eyes, right now they're just clear contacts. Those are things I do versus what I am. I am a regular blue-eyed male. I cannot change that the master potter made me a male. That's just who I am. Now, on the other side, when we get to what Solomon's talking about all the way through the Proverbs, there are things that we do. For instance, I can scar up this vessel that God made, this outer vessel that I have, because I've broken some bones. And those scars show. I've cut myself many times. Just look at my hands. I mean, I've got saw marks where twice as a kid, sawing like this, got off and cut one there and cut one there. Once when I was 7. Actually, that one was on a bandsaw where I actually went into the bandsaw and had to. You know, I've done this stuff. I have scratched up this vessel that is who I am, and I've got scars. Oh, yes, along the way, I could have made a choice and fallen or whatever and had scars from that. I could have had limbs removed if something had happened to me. I could do something that causes me to get really sick. That doesn't change who I am. That just just results or shows the things that I have done that or things that have been my choices. My choices are not always the right choices. My choices are not always godly choices. I've worn colored contacts. I've eaten too much. That's probably the reason why I'm now at 255. I got married at 185. And you know what happens after you get married? You know, within 3 months, you've put on 50 pounds. I don't know why God made us that way. Anyway, you can choose to be nice to others. You can choose to be evil to others. And I could go on and on and on. What Solomon is talking about to his son Rehoboam are things that we have choices about. You cannot change who you are. Oh, you can cut off parts and try to have this and that and whatever. It doesn't change who you are. It doesn't change who you are at all. The choices that are made on this side all happen between the ears, inside the brain. Unhappiness about something that you are right now will not be greener on the other side of the fence if you choose to change something about you. In fact, if you dwell on changing something about you so much that is unlike what the Master Potter made for you, there will always be a scar that represents that change. There will always be a damaged piece of pottery. After the pot is made and it is put into the furnace and it is fired, and you take that teapot and you break off the handle, you glue it back on, it is always going to be scarred from what happened with your choice. Solomon is saying to Rehoboam, look, there are choices you make. It's choices you have to make mentally. So we pick up in verse 16. It's talking about a choice about for women, but it can be put for men. It says, a gracious woman attains honor, and violent men attain riches. Well, I kind of wish we weren't starting off with this verse, but it just happens to be where we ended last week. Because it has the word and in there instead of the word but, I decided that it was probably necessary for me to go check and see in the original if that's what it says. Actually, back in the Septuagint and in the Hebrew, they both say it a little different. I can understand why our English translators try to say it this way, but here's what it really says. It says, a gracious woman raises up honor to the man, but she that hates righteous things is a throne of dishonor. In other words, what it's saying here is a good wife, full of grace, will bring honor to her husband. But on the other side, a bad wife drags her husband down in his work and in his life. It doesn't happen very often in my ministry, but one of the saddest things that happens from time to time, throughout these 24 years that I've been at Sagemont, 22 years in Helping Hands, is a man will come in and he'll have a 2-year-old baby, a 3-year-old baby, and a 4-year-old baby, maybe a 5-year-old baby. And he's having a hard time managing those three kids, and Mama is in jail. Mama is in prison because of choices she has made. Whenever they were running around together, when they were dating, they were both doing drugs and they were doing other sort of things. And they decided to get married. And along the way, the first child comes and daddy decides he needs to straighten up his act. And third child comes. And all along the way, the mother does not choose to change her ways. And where does she end up? She ends up in prison. Now she has brought dishonor to her husband and to her children, in a way. I see these things all the time. Most of the time, it's the husband that brings dishonor to the family in the choices that he makes. What Solomon is trying to say to Rehoboam is choose a gracious woman who brings honor as you're choosing a wife. Choose wisely who you bring as a wife, because that wife can either tear you down in your life or build you up. Either way, we're going to go on when we get to the last chapter in Proverbs, where we're going to see the characteristics of this gracious and wonderful wife. Well, let's go on. The merciful man, verse 17, does himself good, but the cruel man does himself harm. Now, merciful. A merciful person is somebody who treats others with kindness and with mercy. Now, you have to understand, kindness and mercy for someone else is helping someone else with the needs that they have, not specifically the wants that they have. A person may want something, but it not be a need. A merciful person comes along and sees the need and helps with that need. Okay. Merciful. Well, let's talk about a place to stay as an example. Remember, with all these Proverbs are meant so you can spin them out to all different types of situations. Let's just give this one. One situation is, it is regular every week for a man to come in to my office and ask if we could put him up in a hotel for the week. My first question always is, do you have a car? Oh, yeah, I've got a car. I said, good. No, we cannot put you up in a hotel for a week. You have shelter. Now, I'll tell you where you can go park that car and be safe and to sleep in your car. Oh, man, you're mean. No, I did it for 5 months myself, and I turned out better for it. I would not change those 5 months that I spent living in my car. I would not change it. In fact, I've thought many days, life would be much simpler if I was back in that car. When I look around and walk up one of the staircases in my house and see all the stuff that we have bought, I'm going, life was really simpler in 1974 and the winter of 75. It was just simpler. Because the more money you have, the more stuff you buy, the more the stuff owns you because you have to take care of that stuff. I'm so tired of getting in dust and a rag and going through my house. I would like to pass that on to somebody else. In fact, I told my wife, we're going to pass this on to somebody else. Oh, I can't have anybody coming in my house. I said, get used to it because we're fixing to get some help cleaning our house. Or we need to downsize. Oh, honey, we can't downsize because, you know, Mama still lives next door. She can move too. It's time for us to downsize, or we have to get help for her house and for our house. And by the way, we have two swimming pools, one in her backyard and one in our backyard. We have got to get some help. When you only swim one day a year in two swimming pools, and that's not one day in both of them, that's just one day in one of them, you know, you need to make some good choices. And I'm telling you, I don't make good choices whenever we move our mother-in-law next door to us. We should have moved someplace else where we only had one pool or maybe no pool. You know what every man over 40 wants? This is a true statement. Every man over 40 wants three things in his life. Number one, he would love to have the very first car that he ever purchased in his entire life. Unless, number two, somewhere along the line, he had a convertible and he'd rather have the convertible. Number three, if he has a swimming pool in his backyard, he would like it to be filled with dirt. Can any of y'all testify to that? Yep. Yeah, you know what we're talking about, okay? It's the way it is. We have to make good choices. A merciful man looks on the situation and says, okay, you need a place to stay. You got a car. You can stay in that. I'm not in a position to put you up at a hotel. Once I start putting you up in a hotel, are you going to be mad at me when I take you out of the hotel a week from now and you still have no other place to be? What are your job options? What have you done? Where are you in the process? What makes it possible that you will be better off after I've paid for you for a week in a hotel or a night in the hotel? Whenever I finally have to cut that purse string and say, no, you've got to be on your own and you have no place else to go, you're not going to have good words about me. I'm not worried about you not having good words about me. However, we might as well get past that right now. When you get about doing things that you need to be doing to get back on your feet, then I can help you with your needs. But right now, I'm not going to help you with your wants. There's a whole lot more of that story, okay? The cruel man who does things to other people that just brings harm to himself. What he does not do for others. So there is a difference between the man who's righteous, who does the things that a person needs because it's their need. It's not their want, it's their needs. But The cruel man is the one who goes out and intentionally does things that brings harm to others, not helping them when they have a true need. Now, folks, because of the office that I hold here at the church and the job that I do, we go mile one, mile two, mile three, mile four, sometimes 20 miles on taking care of people with their needs. Because what I like to do, just so you know, is I do not like to help somebody by putting a Band-Aid on something. I don't want to put a Band-Aid on it. I want to get you on your feet. But you have to have the plan. You've got a good plan. The plan looks like it works. The plan checks out. We're going to help you get on your feet. If you're just trying to get past today, just to survive today, and that's your total plan, not a good plan. Not a good plan. Verse 18 says, "The wicked earns deceptive wages, but he who sows righteousness gets a true reward. Now, wicked people really do put their trust in their wages. They really do. They earn what they earn, and what they earn deceives them. So let me give you a perfect example of this. And I see this very regular. It's interesting how when you are below the age of 32, that's kind of the magic number. Below the age of 32, you can go and get you a job just about anywhere. Now, that job may last 30 days. It may last 90 days. It may last 6 months. And then you can leave that job and go pick you up another job. And they pick you up another job after that, and another job. And you can bounce around from here to there. But for some reason, at that kind of magical age of 32, that's just from my perception of 22 years of seeing people come in, after you're 32, landing jobs becomes harder. Because they're now looking at your resume, and they see that you work someplace for 3 months and someplace for 90 days, I mean for 60 days, and then another place you work for almost a year, but not quite a year, and then another place, and then another place, and then another place, and another place, and then another place, and every year it's one or two places every year. You have no record of continuity of being able to stick and stay someplace. And I will see this, and this, you know, I've always been able to get jobs, and I've always been able to have good money on these jobs. And I will say to them, okay, you've had good money, but let me ask you a question. How many of these jobs did you voluntarily leave? Oh, I was fired from all of them. Okay, that tells me something about you. And I'm honest with them. This tells me that in the way you think between your ears, which results in the actions of how you produce your body and use your mouth, you are unemployable now. You're past 32. Before you're 32, it seems like employers will go, you know, he's young, he's made some mistakes. Yeah, we'll try him out. We'll try him. Just give him a chance. After 32, it is hard to find an employer who will give you a chance if you have a terrible reputation on paper and in reality. And so I see these people, and it's just an example. They've always made good money, but now they can't make any money at all. They just need my help or Sagemont's help for just a week or two until they find another job so they can make good. You know, I've bought that in the past, and we've helped. The problem is these people have to have a plan. And the problem is if they have not had a steady job, that means they're probably not going to have a steady job. And so things happen, and I will continue to minister to them. And what I find out is most of the problem with keeping a job for these people falls into this category. Their boss, the owner of their company that they're working for, has asked them to do a job and told them how to do it. And they, as the employee, thinks they already know a better way, and the boss is stupid. That's just what it comes down to. What did you get fired for? Well, the boss told me this, but I thought this would be a better way. Okay, how many times did the boss let you get away with it? Oh, we did it 3 or 4 times. So did the boss say, because you won't do things my way, I'm firing you? Well, how did you know? You know, I can always see it on their resumes also. Here's just a clue. Works well with other people. And I look at that and I go, okay, let me ask you a question. You work well with other people. Is that true or is that a lie? Well, what do you mean? Okay, how many bosses have told you you don't work well with other people? Well, all of them. But I've been taking classes. I went to Dale Carnegie. So does that mean that you now work well with other people? No. It does not mean you work well with other people. And I've noticed on resumes, I can pick those things out. When they make statements like that, all I got to do is turn around and start calling the references, and they go, no, that's not true. No, that's not true. That's exact opposite. It's the way it is. People get to the point, and they earn these wages, and the wages are deceptive to them because they think they can always earn them. Hey, let me tell you something. Not saying that major sports figures are unrighteous. But the sad thing that happens, and this is the big example because we all think about this one way or another. We think that because we have earned large sums of money or a good salary, that we can always earn good salaries. And there does come a point, major league folks, you've heard it come out of Brother John's mouth, of the ones that he has counseled, that they were bringing in millions of dollars while they were playing, and within 5 years they're bankrupt and they can never earn that much money again, or even in many cases, because of who they are, employers don't see a value in having them as a distraction working for them. And we have that testimony in this church to where we had a wonderful pitcher that was pitcher for the Astros. Lots of money, members of this church. And by the time he retired and by the time I came into helping hands, I found him living on the streets without a penny to his name. Money is deceptive when it's not used in a righteous way. The righteous person, though, can turn around and whatever money he uses and whatever resources he uses, it just ends up for not only their good, but also for the good of others, and therefore for an eternal reward. Verse 19 says, "He who is steadfast in righteousness will attain to life, and he who pursues evil will bring about his own death." Now, you can tell this already. Solomon is talking about eternal life and eternal death. This is a theme that's already been presented in many of the Proverbs that we've already seen. Righteousness leads to eternal life. Evil leads to eternal death. Verse 20, "The perverse in heart are an abomination to the Lord, but the blameless in their walk are His delight." These are things we do. We make a choice on this side of who we are, whether we're going to be perverse or we're going to be blameless. Perverse is a person who is bent, he's crooked, he's twisted of heart, who despises, who rejects the Lord. Or the other person, the blameless, is the person who is innocent, who is spotless, who's guiltless of heart, who accepts the Lord. Nothing is more hated than a hypocrite by everyone. Nothing is more appealing than a person who does what they say they are going to do. And what's interesting about that is that occurs on both the good and the evil side. Think about this. Those who are evil, who get up from their bed in the morning, conniving a way to do something evil to someone else, will like and appreciate someone who is participating in that same evil, who keeps their word to them. You see how being faithful even to do evil is appealing to an evil person. Because that's a characteristic that is appealing. The problem is, it's not appealing to the Lord. It is, as the scripture says here, it is an abomination to the Lord. Abomination meaning a stench in the nostrils of the Lord Jehovah. Verse 21 says, assuredly, the evil man will not go unpunished, but the descendants of the righteous will be delivered. Now listen to me, it's a fact. You can be an evil person, but that does not mean that your child will be evil. The person who sins is the person who is going to pay for that sin. You likewise can be a righteous person, and you may have an evil child. That doesn't mean that as a righteous person, you're going to pay for the sins of that child. That child is going to pay for the sins. The one who does the sin pays for the sin. Listen, there's also a fact that a righteous person who has a child and raises that child in righteousness, there is a better chance that that child will turn out to be a righteous child than there is if there's an evil person who has a child and lives his life in evil and the child only sees evil, that child may grow to be and do evil. That is the reason why it says in the scripture that the sins of the father passed down to the third and fourth generation, which means that a child that is raised, by the way, that passes both, that's in two passages, and both passages are talking about idolatry. If you raise a child as a Buddhist, that child, because that's what you are, as a Buddhist, then that child will probably be a Buddhist and follow in that idolatry. And the grandchild will follow in that idolatry. And the great-grandchild may go, this all doesn't make sense to me. By the way, that is the testimony of Buddhists. Buddhists do not understand why fiercely Buddhist grandpas have modestly Buddhist children who have just a little bit of Buddhist grandchildren, and the great-grandchildren goes, this is hoopla. That's their testimony. And it has occurred through the years. And the only way that you can keep them in that Buddhist religion is to restrict them with some regulation that they are going, that is a badge of honor or something like that of what they, how you have to live in order to stay this Buddhist type of person. Well, remember what goes on in that passage. The sin that it goes on a third and fourth generation, but then it goes on and says, but for those who love the Lord, it is blessing upon blessing upon blessing. As soon as that evil worship of idolatry is broken, that person who breaks it is the one who is blessed upon blessed upon blessed, and it's not passed down from generation to generation after that.